October 3rd, 1993, a special task force Ranger, consisting of 160 American military special forces personnel, was sent into the heart of the city of Mogadishu in Somalia to capture two key associates of the warlord Mohammed Aidid. The mission ultimately achieved its objective, but things quickly went sideways when two Black Hawk helicopters were shot down by RPG rockets. The raid was intended to be a one-hour mission, quick in and out, grab these guys and get out. But when those helicopters went down, the special forces guys had to go and rescue the downed pilots. And in doing so, they became trapped in the middle of that city, surrounded by thousands of armed hostile forces. And the mission turned into a ferocious, hellacious, 18-hour-long firefight against overwhelming numbers. The story has been recounted by Mark Bowden in his book Black Hawk Down, and then later in the movie of the same name. During that battle, there was one interesting incident. One of the Army Rangers, Specialist John Stebbins, was wounded when a grenade went off very close to him. His rifle was shattered by the blast. His pants were almost completely burned off him. He was hit by shrapnel up and down his body. He staggered back into shelter, dazed, covered in dust, bleeding from wounds all over his body. He had a golf ball-sized chunk of shrapnel embedded in his foot. The entire lower left side of his body was burned. He was treated by a Delta Force medic named Sergeant Tim Wilkinson. They needed to get Stebbins. What Stebbins really needed was to get to medical care, but in the heat of the battle, there was no way to get out. So they needed every able-bodied man to participate because they were under such severe fire. So Wilkinson treated him and told him, you know what, you're numb now, but that's not going to remain, but we need you. So he hands him a rifle and says, you need to cover this window. Then he tells him, like I said, you're numb, and all I can give you when you start feeling the pain is some Percocet. However, as your healthcare professional, I fear I should warn you that narcotics and firearms don't mix. Amazing that a guy in that dire a situation still maintained his sense of humor. But, you know, when you think about that, that's not very helpful advice, you know? You're in a firefight. Oh, and narcotics and firearms don't miss. Really? Not very helpful. I thought about that little incident this morning, or this week, as I was preparing for the sermon this morning, because of there's some instruction that Jesus gives that kind of has that sort of feel. It's like, you know what, Jesus? At first glance, it's not very helpful. And you'll see what I mean. We're going to look this morning as we're continuing our study of Jesus' final briefing of his disciples, John 13 through John 17. This morning we're looking at John 14. We're going to look at verses 1 and 2 and then at verse 27. And there Jesus says this. Here we go. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, I would have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you. And then verse 27, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid. Now, actually, I'm not real fond of the way the NIV has verse 1 translated. I believe literally Jesus said, not you believe in God, but believe in God and believe also in me. Now, there's a premise here that I want to talk about this morning, and the premise is that every human being needs peace. Jesus says here, do not let your hearts be troubled. In Greek, the Greek language that John wrote in, there were actually two ways to make that statement. One of them essentially would have said, don't let your heart start to be troubled. I know you're not troubled now, so don't start being troubled. John didn't use that construction. The grammar that he used literally means stop letting your hearts be troubled. Your hearts are already troubled. Stop that. That's literally what Jesus said here. The disciples' hearts were agitated because Jesus has been talking about one of them is going to betray him, something they couldn't imagine happening. And because he has just said, well, I'm going to be glorified, but then he's made all these dark allusions to him dying and going away, and they're not being able to be with him, and they're pretty upset. They'd been a little concerned, actually very concerned, even before they got to Jerusalem where this took place. Just a few days earlier, John 11, Jesus had been out in this sparsely populated area, particularly to avoid confrontation with the religious leaders of Israel, because he knew that would end badly, as it did. And while he was out there, his friend Lazarus, really good friend of Jesus, Lazarus died. Well, Jesus went towards Lazarus' hometown of Bethany, which is very near Jerusalem. And it's interesting, in John 11, 16, Thomas, who's gotten a bad rap by being doubting Thomas, but the reality is he's a lot like most of us, shows some real loyalty. In John 11, 16, he says, "Let us also go that we may die with him." They knew. They were very clear that, boy, when Jesus, he has this confrontation with the elite of Israel, it's not going to go well, and it's going to be dangerous. And there was sort of this resignation that, okay, we're going, we're going to go die with him, let's go. So they were concerned. These guys had been following Jesus, and they had in their minds, this is the Messiah. And he's got divine power, and he's going to set up his kingdom, and it's going to be great. He's going to rule, and all Israel is going to rule over all the world, and we're going to rule with him. And now all of a sudden it's getting scary. And now Jesus is talking about dying, and they're pretty upset. Jesus says, "Don't let your hearts be troubled. Be at peace, guys." Now, that would just be an interesting historical note if it only applied to those guys, but the reality is, this is a message you hear throughout the Bible. In fact, the most commonly repeated command in the Bible is, do not be afraid. Be at peace. Why is that so often repeated? Why is Jesus having to say this? Well, it's because human beings are afraid. We're anxious. We stress. We're not at peace. In his book, Secrets in the Dark, Frederick Buechner wrote, "Part of the inner world of everyone is this sense of emptiness, unease, and incompleteness." And he goes on to say, "We human beings are kind of like kids opening presents on Christmas Day, and we keep opening one present after another," he says, "because we're hoping that one of them will finally be the one we have waited for so long, the one that fills the empty place, which is the peace that passes understanding." The thing, he said, that we lack most of all is peace. Writer Fran Lebowitz said, "There is no such thing as inner peace. There is only nervousness and death." Oh, man, that's a grim view of life, isn't it? Reflecting the experience of the author. Interesting that studies show, there's been some interesting studies that have shown that human beings, when we are left to our own and are in a quiet place for a period of time, our thoughts naturally tend toward unease and fear and anxiety. Something in us is concerned, is afraid. One of my favorite movies is an old one. It's Field of Dreams, and I've referred to this before because I love this movie, because it's baseball theme and I love baseball, but the theme of the movie is not about baseball. It's about stuff that's way, way, way deeper than that. And there's a crucial scene in the movie. You probably know the story. It's a kind of a weird movie where the central character, Ray Kinsella, hears the voice, "If you build it, he will come," you know, builds a baseball field out in the middle of his cornfield in Iowa. And Shoeless Joe Jackson shows up, you know, old baseball player. Anyway, there's a critical point near the end of the movie where, because instead of growing corn, he's got a baseball field, he's in financial trouble, and his brother-in-law comes and says, "You got to sell this farm, Ray. It's the only way out." And you know, he doesn't want to sell the farm, and they have this big conflict. And finally, his friend, Terrence Mann, says to him, "Ray, people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it, and they'll arrive at your doors, innocent as children, looking for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around. You'll say, it's only $20 a person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it, for it is money they have and peace they lack." It's the whole theme of the movie. It's what it's about. We lack peace. In his book, The Rhythm of Life, Matthew Kelly related a conversation he had with an acquaintance who is one of the most wealthy men in the entire world. This guy has it all. He has houses, mansions all over the world, boats, you know, yachts, planes, cars. And in a quiet conversation, this man admitted to Kelly that he would give it all up, all the mansions, all the planes, the cars, the boats, the money, everything, just to have real peace. All of us know what it is like to have a troubled heart for a variety of reasons. We may not be at peace with ourselves because we see what's lacking in ourselves, or we wish we were something we weren't, or we feel not at peace with God, or we're concerned about what's going to happen in the future. We don't feel safe in this world. We have difficulty in relationships. All of us experience this lack of peace in a variety of ways. Lori, my wife, had an interesting encounter with a neighbor this week. One of those, oh great. You know, Lori has students. She teaches piano and voice in our home. And so, you know, every now and then she'll have, even though she tells them not to, the mothers of one of her students will park in the street in our neighborhood, which you're not supposed to do because the dumb builder didn't build the streets wide enough, but that's another issue. And so we have a neighbor that lives kind of across the street from us that for some reason this has become a big issue with her because it's hard for me to get in and out of my driveway with those people parked there. So sure enough, one of Lori's moms this week, she parked there. She was there for 2 minutes. 2 minutes! But happened to be the 2 minutes when the neighbor came home. And it led to some yelling and some name calling. I wish Lori wouldn't call people names like that. No, I'm just kidding. Lori tried to pacify the situation without much avail. And you know what? For the next 2 days, she couldn't, because of schedule, she couldn't connect with that neighbor, and it bothered her. She would dream about it at night. I've got to resolve this problem with this neighbor. Which, by the way, she did. She baked her cookies, went over, talked to her. But I'll talk about that a little later. The point is, we know what that's like. It's like, oh, there's this thing happening, and I'm not at peace. I got to deal with this? So here's a statement I want you to be very clear on. Every one of us should have this in our minds. I want peace, and everyone I know wants peace. Every human being that you ever encounter is looking for peace. All of us are. So that brings us to what Jesus says here. Do not let your heart be troubled. So what he tells us here, that's a command. Don't let your heart be troubled. Don't be ill at ease. Be at peace. That's a command to choose peace. And this is where we get into that thing of, you know, Sergeant Wilkinson's advice kind of thing. Oh, be at peace. Oh, okay. Thanks, Jesus. Appreciate the advice. That's good. Yeah, right. Have you ever been in a situation where you're facing something ominous or you're wrestling with a big problem in life and someone says to you, well, don't worry. Oh, great. Thank you. Why didn't I think of that? Right. Of course. Don't worry. I thank you. That's annoying, isn't it? Don't worry. I want to smack you. Don't tell me that. I don't want to worry. I can't help it. And so now Jesus comes along and says, well, don't let your heart be troubled. Stop worrying. That's what he's saying. Oh, thanks. Wow, that's really good advice, Jesus. Doesn't that bug you a little bit? It's not the only place where he said that. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, Sermon on the Mount. Everybody loves Sermon on the Mount. Jesus comes along and he says, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink. Don't worry, be happy. Really, Jesus, that's it? Matthew, verse 34, do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry enough about itself. Don't worry, be at peace. Happens in the Old Testament too. Psalm 46 speaks of a time of great fear and stress. And verses 2 and 3, it pictures this stressful situation as the earth gives way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea. The waters roar and foam with the mountains quake with their surging. Man, the psalmist is describing life is just blowing up. The mountains are falling. The sea is raging. It's terrible. And then it says in verse 10, here's what to do. Be still and know that I am God. The Hebrew words translated be still there, the sense of them, or of it, literally is relax, chill. Chill and know that I'm God. Oh, great. The world's blowing up. I'm stressed. And God says, chill, relax. I'm in charge. Wow. You know, in his book, Blink, Malcolm Gladwell, it talks about a lot of interesting things. One of the things that he talks about that caught my attention was he talks about the interesting effects that adrenaline can have on us when we're in stressful situations, and particularly situations where it's actually life-threatening, like combat. He says, studies have shown that when the adrenaline in those kinds of situations starts pouring into the system, it affects our senses. For instance, it sharpens our hearing, and it causes our vision to also sharpen and narrow. It's almost like you get tunnel vision so that you can focus in on the things that really matter. But one of the other interesting effects it has had on many people is it causes their ability to process information to speed up. They think and process more quickly. And so the effect of that is many who have been in those kinds of situations report that things appear to them to happen in slow motion. In a life-threatening situation, things slow down. It's because they're processing more quickly. That's really cool, isn't it? Wouldn't it be cool if that's the way we were whenever things got stressful? Oh, man, we just, it's like we get calm, you know, like in the movies, you know, slow motion. Yeah, I got this. Wouldn't that be great if we could do that? Like Jesus says, yep, I'm not troubled. I got it. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of people for whom anxiety and depression and being stressed are a relentless scourge. They never stop. In many cases, there's a physical cause for that, and that needs to be treated. But beyond that, for most of us, what grabs my attention is that Jesus is saying here, even though we have this thing of, well, I can't help worrying, Jesus says, yes, you can. This command, not let your hearts be troubled, makes no sense unless, in fact, we can choose to be at peace. If we can't choose that, then this is pointless for Jesus to say this. So the issue here then is either, you know, our experience is that sometimes we struggle with that. Either Jesus is telling us something that is pointless, or he wasn't in touch with reality, or he's telling us something that is actually true, that we can choose to obey. Though sometimes we don't always experience that, maybe the problem isn't with what Jesus said, but with what we experience. And I'm going to suggest that that's, in fact, the problem. We can choose Even though there are times in our lives when you've got this thing that's gnawing at you, and you wake up at the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's in, on you, you're churning, and you think, I don't want to think about this one anymore. I want to stop worrying about this. And so now I'm going to stop worrying about it, and then you don't. How do we choose peace in those times? Well, Jesus actually says there are some things you need to do to choose peace. And the first one is this: you need to trust God. That's what he says. Don't let your hearts be troubled, but believe in God. Believe also in me. Trust God. Trust me. Now, let me tell you about a friend that Lori and I have. Her name is Angie. We've known Angie for a long time. Angie grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, lives there today with her husband, Storm. They moved out to California when Storm had to move here for his job. He was a baseball player, and he got traded to the San Diego Padres, and that's when we got to know him when they lived out here. Angie hated California. She did not like it here at all. But, you know, she kind of made some peace with California, and she lived here, and they lived here for probably 4 years, I believe, not here in San Diego. They were only here for less than a year. And then he got traded up to Oakland. He went to Oakland, and he played for the A's, and they made it to the World Series a couple of times. 1989, they played in the Bay Series, Oakland A's versus San Francisco Giants. Really cool series because they only had to drive back and forth across the bay to, you know, switch stadiums. However, that series was, World Series was known for one great historical fact. Earthquake. Interrupted by a big earthquake. One that knocked down part of the Bay Bridge and collapsed a freeway. Knocked down a bunch of buildings. Killed a lot of people. Angie and Storm were at Candlestick Park when that happened. The game was about to begin, and Angie sat there in that park and watched as the tiers of the stadium were going, ooh, 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 and things were falling down. And Angie said, that's it. I am never going to live in California again. After that season, they moved, and she has never lived here again. Because for her, there would have been one thing she'd always been able to count on in life, and that was, the ground stayed still. You could always count on that. And all of a sudden in California, it started moving in a really frightening way. She could never be at peace if she couldn't have something that she could stand on and count on. And that's exactly the way it is for us. We will never be at peace unless there is something solid that we can always count on, that we know will always be there. Jesus says that something is the character of God. That never changes, and that's what we can count on. So the idea is that we should trust God because he's going to make sure that nothing bad ever happens, right? Think about the context of these verses. Jesus is telling these guys, stop letting your hearts be troubled. Is he saying, nothing bad is ever going to happen? No. The worst thing in history was just about to happen, and they were going to go through it. He was going to experience it. He's not saying, oh, nothing bad is ever going to happen. He's saying, the worst thing in the world is about to happen, and in the midst of it, don't let your heart be troubled. That's very different than, oh yeah, God makes sure that nothing bad will ever happen. He's saying, make sure you have something solid to stand on and count on in the midst of the bad things that are going to happen. That's what he's saying. What can we trust God for? Well, Jesus tells us. He says, in my Father's house are many rooms. Were not so, I would have told you. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. Now, that didn't mean that, you know, heaven wasn't finished. They had this big construction project. You had to go and, you know, do a lot of new room. The preparing a place, that was the cross and the resurrection. That's preparing the place for them to go, the way to get there. And his point is, the way has been prepared. He's done it. It's like, you know, if you suppose you're going to on a vacation and you're going to go vacation with some extended family, you're going to go stay at this nice hotel, and you arrive early at noon, and you know check-in time is not till 3 o'clock, so you know it's not going to be ready, and you walk into the lobby and there's a family member, and the family member says, "Oh, I've already checked you in. The room is ready. Here's your key, and the room is paid for. I'm paying for it. So let's move you in." Jesus is telling his men, guys, that's what it's going to be like for you who believe in me. The room is ready. The way is prepared. You've got the key. All you're going to have to do is move in when the time comes. So the point here is, we can trust God for our eternal future. And that is huge. We stress over a lot of things in life. You know, I've got unexpected bills. How am I going to pay for these? Got a huge test tomorrow and my whole life hangs in the balance. Oh, I've got this thing that the doctor has identified. It could be some hideous disease. Man, we stress over things. What's happening with my child? Oh no, I've lost my job. All of these things we stress over. Here's something all of us somewhere in the back of our minds know, but we sometimes forget. All of those things, in light of death, are insignificant. All of the things we stress over. I know that from personal experience. Most of you know, we've gone through the gut-wrenching experience of having a child die when our son Joel, our first son, died as a baby, as an infant. Man, you stand at the edge of a grave and you get crystal clear vision. The stuff we worry about, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that I know that I will be able to see my child again. That's all that matters at that moment. That's really all that matters in life. And to know that you have this promise from Jesus, that the room has been prepared, it's ready for you, you're just going to move in. After that, everything else is pretty small potatoes. Really doesn't matter that much. So you start with that. Second thing you can trust God for is that He has a good plan. The disciples are confused, they're fearful. The next day, their worst fears are going to become a reality. Their beloved master is going to be mocked, rejected, tortured, killed. Their dreams will be totally destroyed, and they themselves will be in danger. Bad things. And Jesus is telling them that through all those bad things, they could trust God. Why? Because it was all in His plan. God, in some way that is beyond our ability to comprehend, is able to take some of the most evil things that ever happened in life and use them as part of His plan, use them for good. And that's what we can trust. Jesus is saying, yeah, you know what, guys? Something bad is going to happen tomorrow, but relax. I got this. I'm on it. Let me take care of it. And He says the exact same thing to us. The things that we stress over in our lives. You know, as we think about this issue of choosing to not let our hearts be troubled, we need to understand that we are continually, day in and day out, faced with a decision. We have two alternatives before us. One alternative is to decide that we are going to run things. I'm going to control what happens in this world. And I'm going to force circumstances and people to go the way I want. I'm going to force my will on this world so that I get what I've figured out I need. That's one alternative. Alternative number two is to say, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to be faithful to Him. I'm going to do what I need to do to honor Him and to be the kind of person He wants me to be. And I'm going to trust His wisdom and His goodness and His love and His sovereignty and His power to work out His good plan in my life, whatever that takes. A picture that helps me think about this is a number of years ago, Lori and I were on a flight. We had been up north and we were flying home, flying down the coast, and it was around Thanksgiving time, November, and one of those big winter storms hit that we have here, like you've seen here in January, and all those really raging storms. Okay. This happened to be one of the ones, you know, the big Pacific Northwest storms that just roared in. And so we're on this plane flying down the coast, and man, oh man, we started experiencing turbulence that was the the worst I think I've ever experienced. It was really bad. I mean, that plane was bouncing all over the sky. Now, one of the things, you know, I never particularly enjoy turbulence on an airplane, but one of the things that helps me is I usually try to just look at the flight attendants, you know, and if you're experiencing turbulence and they're just calmly going about their business, like, okay, this is normal, we're good. In this case, they had been serving drinks. Man, they put that little cart away and they slammed down in the seats and buckled up, and I looked at them and they were turning white, tight faces. I thought, you know, if the flight attendants are worried, time to worry, you know? This plane, it's scary, you know, and it's the kind where it's people are sort of, you're hearing this kind of whimpering going on in the plane, you know, that kind of, and then all of a sudden there'll be a big drop and you'll hear people, ah! You know, it was that, you know, for about 15 minutes of this, it was no fun at all. Now imagine yourself in that plane. You've got two alternatives, don't you? One of them is you can unbuckle and run up the aisle, break into the cockpit, and wrest control of that airplane from the pilot and say, I'm going to save the day. I'm going to take care of this thing. The other is you can sit in there, buckle up, and say, okay, guys, you're the trained pilots. You're skilled. You know what's going on. I'm going to trust you. Which of those would you say is the better plan? I'm going to go with plan B, because if we do plan A, the plane is going to crash because I don't know how to fly it. Ah, guess what? I don't know how to fly the universe either. Though I think I do, and I continually try to wrest control of it from God, the reality is at the end of the day, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a lot better off saying, all right, God, you know what's best. You got it. I'm going to trust you. Some of our greatest anxiety in life is caused by our own insistence on controlling things and getting what we want. We have this thing out there that we think we need, and we hang on to it so tightly, and we're so afraid of losing it, whatever it is, that in fact is the thing that is causing our anxiety. And the way to find peace is to say, it's yours, God. It's up to you. Oh, okay. Trust God, let go, and I'll have peace. I'm guessing that you've had the same experience I've had, which is something really got hold of you, you're really struggling with it, and you've done that. You say, okay, God, I let go. And 30 seconds later, you're like this. I got it back. Why can't I let go? Here it's yours. Had that problem a little bit? Yeah, you know what? Hang on to that thought. I'm going to come back to that as we close this sermon in just a few minutes. One more thing I think we need to see in this passage. We need to live in the peace of Christ. Verse 27, Jesus says, my peace I give you. And it's not the kind of peace that the world gives. The world offers us palliatives for our stress and our fear and anxiety, doesn't it? To really be at peace, what do we need? Well, we need to feel safe. We need to feel secure. We need to be connected to our Creator. If we're not, there's always going to be an unease and uncertainty. We need to know that we're forgiven because we all feel guilty, because we all fall short. We don't even meet up with our own personal standards, much less God's. We need to know that we're all right, despite our flaws, that somehow we're loved anyway and that we're approved. We need to know that our lives have meaning. We need to know that we're not alone. All of these things are needed, and we need to know that our future, especially after death, is taken care of. Those are the things that if we don't have them, our lives will never be earthquake-proof. If any of those things is missing, will not have peace. Now the world comes along and says, well, here's how you have peace. You do all the things that you want to do to sort of prop up your image of yourself, you know, so that you have a better self-image so you can be at peace with who you are, have esteem for yourself, got to do that, you know, be successful at something. And it's funny how we do that in a so weird ways. You know, last week we got our electricity bill from SDG&E, and it came with it was this little thing that talked about conserving electricity, and it had a deal in there where it compares our electricity usage with others. And it said, you know, here's average electric usage, and here's really efficient homes, their electric usage. Well, ours was lower than the efficient. It was really low. And I looked at that, and I sort of felt this, that's right. That's me. I'm Mr. Conserve. I'm very green, aren't I? I was feeling really good about it, you know? It's kind of silly, but you sort of have this comparing thing, and that's right, I'm pretty good. Then it occurred to me, oh, you know what? The reason for that is that this was for the last month, and we were out of town for a week, so it's comparing our 3 weeks with their 4 weeks. But it's that we're always doing that, propping ourselves up because I want to feel better about myself so I can be at peace. And then the world comes along and says, what you really need to do is you need to have enough power, enough resources. If you get enough resources, then you can be safe. Then you won't have to fear. You know what? I've got news for you. You are never safe in this world. You're kidding yourself if you think you are. While we were coming home from our trip to Mississippi, one point we... In Atlanta, we had to go through the TSA, and, you know, the lines were unbelievable. It looked like those Disneyland lines, you know, where it's going back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. And the problem is the ride at the end of it really is not much fun. So, you know, long, 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 long wait, and then you get to the end, and you know how you finally get to the place where they're going to screen you, and isn't that just, you know... I've got a carry-on, I've got a backpack, I've got my boarding pass and my ID, and I've got to empty my pockets and take my shoes off and take your jacket off and put it there, and it's like, you know, it's just, I hate this. And as I was in the middle of that, I suddenly remembered a book I read not too long ago called The Next Decade, and it's written by a guy named George Friedman, who is a world-renowned expert in security. And in that book, as I was reading that, he said, oh yeah, you know the whole TSA thing? That's all theater. It does not help against terrorists. It's just there to make the passengers feel safe. It's all it is. It's not going to stop a dedicated terrorist. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, about the last 4 times I have flown, I've had a little bottle of liquid, it's a nasal spray, that you're supposed to only have in that little pouch. I haven't had in that little pouch. I've had it in my carry-on. They've never found it. They don't know. Never found it. I'm a terrorist, I know, yeah. Point is, you think you're safe? You're not safe. This world's a dangerous place. And the world comes along and says, you can make yourself safe. No, you can't. Not if you're relying on your resources, your power, your control. Jesus comes along and says, here's what I offer you. I offer you forgiveness. I offer you unconditional love. I offer you to experience your worth, knowing that you matter so much to God that He sent His own Son to die for you. That's how valuable you are. And nothing will ever change His love for you. I offer you a life with meaning. I offer you a life where you know you're never alone, that I will always be with you. I offer you a life where you have an eternal future that is secure. And that is the peace that Christ offers. It is a peace that Philippians describes as a peace that goes beyond our ability to comprehend. Interesting, I was talking to Greg Easton this week, and he had a big, important event in his life, a big meeting that was sort of ominous and difficult. And he told me, you know, it was interesting going into that just before the meeting, all of these scripture verses started flooding into my head, And he said, all of a sudden there was just great peace. And he went into this meeting where he should have been stressed and angry and frustrated. And he was calm and at peace. And the other person was the one who was emotional, the boss with the power. Greg was the one at peace because Jesus offers peace. Okay, so we got peace that Jesus offers us. We're supposed to choose peace by trusting God, but we struggle with that. So how do we do that? What can we think about? Well, first of all, as you think about being at peace, the first thing is to look to Jesus for peace. Don't look to trying to, you know, keep yourself so busy that you don't even notice the lack of peace in your life, or don't try to drown it with drugs or alcohol, or don't try to amuse it to death, make it go away because you don't have to listen to it. Don't try to convince yourself that you're okay with who you are because look at what you can do and look at what you've accomplished. Look to Jesus for the peace that you need. Start there. Secondly, then, hand it to Jesus. Whatever it is that might cause you stress, give it to Him. Look, we're all going to desire things would go well. But what the disciples needed to do was to say, all right, Jesus, if you insist you have to go to the cross, then so be it. We're going to trust your wisdom. And we're going to trust you in all that happens here. And that's what we need to do too. And one of the things that can really help with that is to just focus on living today, like Jesus says. Our biggest stresses come from hanging on to things that are in the past or fearing things that are going to happen in the future. Jesus says, don't do that. Live today. This may be it. You know, Jesus may come back tonight. And all you're worried about what's going to happen next week would be of no use. It's funny. I mentioned Lori's little interaction with our neighbor. So yesterday, she's thinking, I need to go over and I need to resolve this. I need to talk to our neighbor and make sure that, you know, tell her I'm sorry for anything, you know. And so she baked her cookies and she goes over there and talked to her. And she was out there a long time talking to the neighbor. I thought, oh, this must not be going well. She comes back in. I said, hey, how did that go? And she said, it was kind of anticlimactic. She said, oh, yeah, that's fine. Oh, okay. Just wanted you to know, I want to make your life fine. I don't want to cut. No problem. In other words, all of the stress that Lori felt built up over this thing, she was the only one feeling it. The neighbor was not feeling it. The things that she was concerned about happening never happened. You know, on September of 2012, our son-in-law, future son-in-law, Michael, you guys all know, he's a pilot for the Marines. And he flew at that point the hottest jet the Marines had, his F-18 pilot. And this guy, let me tell you, he is a tremendous pilot. He was really the best pilot in his squadron. He got reassigned because this is what the Marines do. He got assigned to do a ground tour of duty. And you all know, Afghanistan. Oh, great. He's going to be sent to Afghanistan. That's great, yeah. Well, they said, we're going to train you to be a forward air controller. As soon as I heard that, alarm bells went off. I thought, oh, no. Forward. That's an important word. Forward air controller operating out of a forward operating base. Oh, no. And then he told me he's being trained to be part of a team of about 19. I knew what that was. That's a special forces team. He's being trained to be a part of a special... You know, I have read the books. I know what those guys do. I got to tell you, I said a few things to Lori. I didn't say anything to Carissa because I was worried to death. I thought, that guy, they're going to send him over there and he's going to be in the worst of the combat. I really stressed over it. Shortly before he went over there, We got information that mission has been scrubbed. That team was broken up, and Michael went over to Afghanistan and spent 6 months there, and his biggest enemy was boredom and his commanding officer, who turned out to be truly psychotic, and I'm not kidding. He experienced having some shots fired at him in anger, but you know what? All of my worries were for nothing. It didn't happen. Let tomorrow take care of itself. Just live today. Thirdly, follow Jesus. And this is really important. This is the thing that will really free us up. Want what Jesus wants. When we live for His will, if we say, you know what really matters to me is not that I be rich, not that people like me, not that I have that I be powerful, not that life be comfortable. What I want is that I would honor God and I would bring Him glory and I would love people the way He wants me to love them. You know what? Nothing can stop you from doing that. No circumstance can stop you from glorifying God and loving people the way He wants you to love them, praising Him no matter what may happen. You can do that in any and every situation. And when we focus on that, all of a sudden there is real freedom. A number of years ago, I saw one of those little 60-minute segments that was focused on some young men from Sudan who had grown up in that war-torn country, you know, persecuted people. They grew up in refugee camps. These guys were orphans and grew up orphans and in refugee camps. And what amazed me was, as they interviewed these guys reflected unbelievable faith. And they kept glorifying God. And it was like, this is impressive. And I thought, here they were in some of the most difficult circumstances of the world, and they were carrying out the mission God had for them. One of them had the incredible blessing of being selected to come to the United States and live here. And he rejoiced in that. So he came here and they settled him in Atlanta. And man, the poor guy, you know, he's in a very difficult situation because here he's learning a new culture. He's got no money whatsoever. He has no skills. And he's trying to learn a new culture and trying to learn how to make it in this culture. And they, after he'd been here a while, they interviewed him again. They said, so how do you feel about where you live? And he got this huge grin on his face. And he said, this is like a second heaven. Good reminder for us. You know, for that guy coming over here, it doesn't matter what, he's living in circumstances that we would think so difficult, so hard. He's going, I'm in heaven. This place is great. You know what? We have reason to trust God and to say, well, I'm going to care about is honoring Him. Finally, one thing you can do that will really make a difference is thank Jesus. Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, great passage that says that we should let all of our requests be made known to God, and that we'll get peace if we do. And all of us have said, oh yeah, I've done that. I've made my request to God, but I don't have peace. That's because most of the time we forget this little phrase that Paul includes in there. It says, let all your requests be made known to God with thanksgiving. Oh yeah, that. I need to thank God. Meaning, God, it's in your hands. I'll trust you and I'll be thankful to you for whatever comes my way, whatever you bring into my life. When we do that, then we will begin to experience the peace that passes understanding. Let's pray. Father, we thank you that peace is possible for us because, boy, does our world need it, and boy, do we need it. We hate being anxious and stressed and feeling ill at ease and feeling like there's just something wrong, and we just long for our hearts to be at peace. We thank you, Father, that there is an answer for us, that you have provided an answer through your Son, Jesus Christ. That when we trust in you and what you have done for us through Jesus, there's certainty about the future. There's certainty about how you're going to work in our lives. There's certainty about who we are in relationship to you. And we can even know that we could be at peace with your love for us. So Father, help us to choose peace and to not let our hearts be troubled. Amen.